Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Happiness Is podcast with me, your host, Bruce Aitchison from Happiness Is Egg-Shaped. And today we've got another first. We just keep racking them up. What do? You invite somebody on who is not just a Hall of Famer, but is a World Rugby Hall of Famer. We talk about pioneers. We talk about people that were there at the beginning. Well, that's what we're bringing to you. And then they have this illustrious career, and do they stop? No. Do they go and they help other people, and we are going to market, we are going to promote, we are going to sell, because we need your help. And who better to do it than the one and the only Sue Dorrington? Hello.
Good morning, Bruce. Lovely to see you, and so fantastic to meet you.
Yes, and you too. This is a huge honor for me. Now, Hall of Fame is one of those things that I suppose people like me who love the game and pay attention know what it is. What does it mean to be in the Hall of Fame, and what was the reason for you being inducted into the Hall of Fame?
Bruce, I'll give you a little bit of context first. So four women from the Richmond Rugby Club sat down one day and said, we need a Women's Rugby World Cup. And we literally set out to organize the first ever Women's Rugby World Cup in 1991. Now, you have to understand, we had zero support. We had no money. We had no governing body support, RFU, IRB, you name it. It was nothing. And there was no one. And we would meet early mornings and before work, and for me, before a fitness session, and we put together the first ever Women's Rugby World Cup that took place in Cardiff in April 1991. Utterly incredible. From that, we all left at the end of the tournament. I played in that tournament. I was the England hooker at the time. I played in that tournament. The end of the tournament, we all left and we never spoke about it again. It was utterly incredible. I think we were just traumatized. But there was never any debrief. It was never any, oh my word, what just happened? So we all went on to our lives, because two of the women had babies. You know, Alice and I had jobs. We had to go back to work. We went back to work the next day. And so the story went very quiet. Then 94, the lovely Scottish team picked up a failing Netherlands tournament. Those stories weren't told anywhere. And in at the last Women's Rugby World Cup, they invited us out to New Zealand to be inducted into the World Rugby Hall of Fame. And it was honestly one of the greatest honors of my life. I received this email from a chap by the name of John Eales one morning. And I opened it and I thought, oh my
God. As you do, just John Eales.
As one does. World Rugby Hall of Fame. What is this? I had absolutely no clue. And I almost went delete until I started reading a few lines. So I read the lines and then I had to close it, take it in, and I went back into it and I read it and I sobbed. So what they were doing, it was in World Rugby invited the four of us out to acknowledge the 91 World Cup, our contributions into creating the Women's Rugby World Cup. And it went from there. It was just, honestly, Bruce, it was one of the best days of my life. In a room full of fantastic people, just before the World Cup final between New Zealand and England, it was just theater in the making. And the atmosphere, and it was just such an electric day and evening. So I just, what an honor.
In the making, you said there. You were in the making. You were the one who were writing the recipe. I mean, did the four of you sit there and go, this was us. We did this.
Well, it's really funny you ask that, because people do ask us that question, and that we had absolutely no idea of the legacy. What we wanted was to make sure that there was another World Cup. We had no clue that all these years later, that tournament would build and become what it is now. So we're very proud of it. We're extraordinarily proud of our achievements.
And you just never deserve to be.
Well, we the story went quiet. We never, ever anticipated being told.
And take me right back to the four of you sitting around. You know, you've come from the States.
I did.
Pretty much, it seems, to have got involved in this game. I mean, different times, no internet, no Zoom, no social media
Nothing.
Accounts to recruit people. So the four of you sit around and say, we're going to make this World Cup. How on earth do you do that?
How do we start?
Like, where's page one? Because as you've said, there's no manual, there's no support.
Yeah, we wrote the manual. And it was, first and foremost, I was surrounded by really smart women. And Debs Griffin, who, as you know, is going to be the next president of the RFU during the Women's Rugby World Cup year, which is such a coup. Love
Monumental.
That.
Monumental.
Alice Cooper. So Debs actually chaired the committee. Alice Cooper was our press and PR. Mary Forsyth, who is another American, another Yank that we all played with. She was finance and I was the commercial director. So we, first and foremost, we sat around the table and gave each other jobs because Deb's handpicked her team based on skill set. And she said to the Women's Rugby World, Women's Rugby Committee at the time, that she'll do the World Cup, but only on her terms and that she picks her committee. So she picked us. And we sat around and literally divvied up the responsibilities. And like you say, Bruce, it was staggering. We had telephone calls and faxes. Remember faxes? People don't even know about faxes. You know, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have social media. We had no mobile phones. We had no digital printing. Everything, it was just labored. Everything was labored. But we had this army of volunteers behind us, who then we, you know, energized and brought to the table as well. So, you know, we did it and we brought it to Wales because it was just, they were receptive to the idea. They hosted our kickoff and our post-tournament dinner. So they had, you know, they brought to the table a few things. And so it was just, yeah. And John Eales said, I've never met so many agitated women. Because we saw
that's
it
a brave statement. That's a,
it was
brave,
a brave statement.
Statement.
Brave statement. But you know, he meant it in the kindest way, in that he, you know, we saw something before anybody else saw it.
And then it flies. So why rugby? I mean, to come from the States to London to end up at Richmond. I mean, there's an autobiography there, isn't there?
Oh, there is. But it's hilarious, actually, because I was very young at the time. And I had started playing rugby in the States, in Minnesota, where I'm from. And I absolutely loved it. I just fell in love with the game. I had never seen it before. I went to watch someone play and I said, what on earth is this? I'd never seen it before. And I didn't get it, but he said to me, well, a women's team starting. I joined that women's team and never looked back. And I, 2 years in, I thought to myself, I want to be better. Where can I get better? And I thought, England. So I knew no one. I didn't have a passport. I had to apply for my passport. I'd never been abroad before. And I left the country with a one-way ticket. I had £100 in my pocket. I had no credit cards. I knew no one. And I came to the UK. I landed. I couldn't find a women's team. So I started training with the London Cornish men because I found them in timeout. And they were advertising for rugby players. And I thought, oh, that's me. And I went along to training. And it was in Notting Hill inside because it was winter at the time. And you know, some of the players would give me an extra little knock because they didn't want me around. And some of the players would, you know, invite me for a drink post. And I have to say, Bruce, it was hilarious. And I can still to this day, I can sing most Cornish anthems and songs because they would go to the bars and sing. They were fabulous singers. But I'll tell you one thing, I'll never touch any scrumpy. That was awful stuff. And so I was out running one day and I ran into the Imperial College women. They said, come and play with me. I played with them for a couple of games. I was deemed the Yank Tank. And at that time, Finchley women were setting up. So I then met someone who said, come over and play with us at Finchley. So we went and played at Finchley for a couple of years. And then we moved to Richmond. We had Great Britain versus France at Richmond. And the team went, oh, we love this. Come again. And we said, well, what do you think about a women's team? And we moved to Richmond. And, you know, I've never looked back. I was in the backs in my previous playing life. But I got to Richmond and they said, oh, Sue, the game's passed you by. Threw me in the front row, Bruce, at hooker. And oh, my word. I found my place in life. I found my tribe, that front row. So, and never looked back. And then had just the most glorious career with Richmond. I played with Great Britain, British Lionesses, England Legends, every representative side in the UK possible, and had the most glorious career. And was pretty much a lot of the shaping of me.
And the people that you met, the friendships that you built, those are the things that, if I asked you the number of games you played, could you recall the score? You would struggle to remember more than maybe five or six, but the friendships you've made have lasted. And to sit there next to some of your closest friends and all be inducted into the Hall of Fame, I mean, that's priceless, isn't it?
It was priceless because, of course, they were all Richmond women. And so we were, you know, we were holding the flag for Richmond and very proud of what we achieved.
And some of those women that came to the World Cup, I mean, the countries that came, was it just a phone call and they said, yeah, don't worry, we'll see you there? I mean, how did that work? They must have had to look after their own logistics and flights and all that kind of stuff. You didn't have the time or energy to do that for them.
Well, importantly, we didn't have the money. So what we said to the teams, we had 12 sides in the end. And what we said to the teams is, this is happening. You can come. We'd love you to come. We're inviting you to come and join us. But it's self-funding because we couldn't offer them a penny. We had nothing. And I remember we launched the tournament in London and in Cardiff, and I was the lead in Cardiff and for the launch, and we were still waiting for France to come in. So we launched and we didn't even have 12 teams. We were just on a wing and a prayer, I have to say. And it was phone calls and faxes. And I remember very foolishly bringing a very, very large contract into the sauna one night because I thought I would multitask and get read this fax whilst in the sauna at my gym. And lo and behold, the pages went blank. And Yeah, the Heat destroyed it. But, you know, it was just chaos. It was chaos. But it was organized chaos, and it was smart chaos. And the teams, you know, came from as far as New Zealand, Japan, and we had the most glorious tournament. And it was so well supported by the Welsh community. They just loved coming to the games. And I think it was a game changer for a lot of people watching the game for the first time to say, actually, I think they can play.
So here's a phrase I read. Now, I only found this when I was looking at stuff to do with the first Women's World Cup.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were told this. I don't know actually where this came from, but I've never heard this before until I knew I was going to speak to you. Women's rugby is a participation sport, not a spectator sport.
Yes. And funny enough, Bruce, it's interesting that you pull that comment out, because I was told that because I was the commercial director and I was out looking for sponsors. And one of the sponsors came back to me to say, why on earth would we do this? What do you have to give us? Because, of course, we were covered in the papers as a novelty at the time. It wasn't serious reporting. We had no radio, no television. Of course, none of the social media existed. So we didn't have a lot of commercial benefits to give back. And then they sort of hammered us on audience. So what, you get 200 people in an international? And so when I was looking for money, it was really tough to give commercial benefits back. And one of the sponsors said to me, well, Sue, your game is definitely, you know, a participation sport and not a spectator sport. And that was a phone call I'll never forget.
And one that spurred you on, I would assume?
Oh, I mean,
just lit the fire.
Just lit the fire. I mean, you know, I was already, you know, smoking, and just lit the fire, and added to the agitation that there was no way we were going to be determined by any comment. You know, we had played women's rugby for so many years prior to this. We had already had all the comments, all the stick, all the negativity, all of it. Nothing was new to us, but that wasn't going to deter us.
And as you look at the journey from then to now, you've told us about the end point of that final in New Zealand, and you've told us about the beginning. Have there been points through that journey where you've got involved again, or you've hung your head, or you've punched the air in delight? What moments in that period of time have been memorable for you?
So I have to say, and this is my voice cracking, I have to say one of the proudest moments was England beat France at Twickenham, the standalone game. We were, in my day, I have to stop the crackling in my voice now. In my day, we were told, because I hung around the game afterwards, after I finished playing, and I did what I could and organized the sevens, organized the Six Nations, and worked for the RFUW and et cetera. So I did tap dance on the edges. And when we were putting games in bigger stadiums, we were told that we would never, never have a standalone game at Twickenham. So to see France and England, oh, my heart sang. It was just, and we all went, all of us, we had a massive Pioneers reunion. We're all there, and the audience and the engagement, moms and daughters, fathers and sons, it was so electric. That, Bruce, was one of my proudest moments.
And I've got absolutely no quit. The hairs in the back of my neck are standing up because I wasn't there. I wanted to be there, couldn't be there. I know
incredible.
People who were, and like you said, one of my mates, who you know, Sean,
yes,
took his son to the game. Father and son went to watch standalone women's game at Twickenham because it was the right thing to do. It's an
absolutely
amazing thing. And the atmosphere just looked amazing. Absolutely amazing. But it's not a spectator sport.
No, it's not. 58,000 people would say differently, I'd say, because we broke the record that was set in New Zealand, in Auckland. And so we broke that record, and it was 58,000 people that came to watch us.
And when you look at the game now, and there's, you know, there are superstars now. There are kids running around pretending to be female rugby players, which,
yeah, I love it.
You know, when I speak to current players, they'll often say their hero was Dan Carter or Johnny Wilkinson, because that was who they could see. They couldn't see you because you did, there wasn't the exposure. Now you've got kids running around pretending to be current athletes. Who do you look at and think, wow, they would have been my hero?
Well, I think first and foremost, Bruce, the statement is, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And I commend England and the RFU for really putting the England women and the Red Roses on the map, because they have worked really hard over the years to put them at the forefront, and it is paying off. And I mean, I have so many girl crushes. Those women are so fantastic. And I have, well, Marley Packer, of course, is my favorite. Marley and I, we were out in New Zealand together, or I was out in New Zealand, she was playing, and we had to do an interview together. And we had never met. And it was like just these meeting of the minds. And we had such fun. We just giggled throughout the interview. And then I said to Marley at the end, I said, oh gosh, Marley, I said, you know, you're all so fit, because I was one of those women who tried to stay fit as fit as I possibly can to play back then. And I said, you're all so fit, and you can go into the gym anytime you want, and it's structured, and you've got support, and it just, can I just scrum against you? I want to see how strong you are. Can I just lift you? I just want to lift you, you know, see how solid you are. Because it was, you know, can I just touch your shoulders? And it was just, you know, I was just in awe of this physical being that these players have become, because, they've got the infrastructure and the support behind them to do it. And so it was hilarious. So we met this morning, and for the first time, and we had laughs and we interviewed. And then I went on like this, as I do. And I said, Marley, let me just pick you up. So I picked her up and I went, oh. And I said, oh God, Marley, I'm going to put you down, because I can't imagine calling the coach going, dropped Marley, she's not playing in the final. So injured Marley Packer, your star. So, I'm just in awe of those women and everything they give to the game.
I love that so much, because you've got that enthusiasm that I think people, when I do it, find it a bit creepy. When you do it, it'll probably be quite a nice thing, because you're a Hall of Famer. But I do love that. I would no doubt Marley's now filed for a restraining order.
Totally. My friends say I'm stalking her. And I said that to her the other day. And I said, after the England game, I said, Marley, I think my friends think I'm stalking you. And she said, no, Sue, I'm stalking you.
Yes, that's great. I love that. One of the stars of the show from the Olympic Sevens, and then she grew and grew and grew, and I love listening to her and watching her. Ruby Tui, is that, I mean, we need people like that, don't we?
She is an incredible athlete, an incredible player. She is the full package, Bruce. She is what everyone aspires to be, and she is that full package. And just watching her out in New Zealand, it was such an honor. And a really nice person on top of it. So, gosh, can't speak more highly of her.
Yeah, she seems to be doing great things. I love every little soundbite that she's able to give. So staying involved in the game after, you know, being almost a committee person alongside being a player, you've then given back a huge amount. Was there no point where you decided, hang on, I've done my shift, I'm out, it's time to move on to something else? What kept you?
The love of the game, the history, and some amazing people like you, Bruce, like anyone who's played rugby. It's those incredible relationships and friendships that we have. And somehow I just kept dancing in there, and it kept us connected. I sit on a committee called the Red Roses, and we call ourselves the Wilted Roses, but we're the past players. There's a handful of us that just really create like an alumni, you know, just to make sure that everything is ticking over. Jill Burns, a wonderful woman, Carol Isher, we're just so many incredibly. So we've got about six women that we really keep things ticking over. So at no point did I say my job's done. It's never done. There's still more to do. There's still more bars to raise. And I'm quite happy to be there agitating.
Yeah, I love that. Now, there's a group in Scotland, the Scottish Thistles, then we discussed this kind of off air, who are being really proactive. Now, part of that, I think, the almost a responsibility to tell the current players where they've come from.
Yeah.
We're all standing on the shoulders of the who went before us.
Yeah.
At what point do you tell those stories to the current crop? I mean, that England team you've got now, professional players posting videos in the gym, you know, they drink coffee till it comes out their ears, it seems, if you follow them on Instagram. At what point is it important to tell them, listen, this is what it used to be like?
Well, there's two standout moments that I can talk to you about. And the first one was they were training, the current team was training at Bisham Abbey. And myself, Jill, Carol Isherwood, and a few players went down. And Sue Day led the conversation. And we actually talked to the players. And we it was like a little forum, and they were sitting there, and there we were. And we just talked to them about who we were, our experiences in playing for England and our journey in that world, because their experiences will be very, very different. They have such an incredible infrastructure that they to play at this level that they need and they deserve. So we had a really good chat, and that was the first time we actually approached them and did a legacy history piece with them. And we were blown away. They actually came up afterwards because we stayed around afterwards and chatted to them.
And they touched their shoulders and lifted
them
up.
Yes. And they came and they sort of came over to us, and they were like asking us questions. And I just thought they were just going to go away going, oh God, these middle-aged old women are just get rid. And they were actually really engaging. Now, I don't know if their comms people told them to be engaged, but in my mind, they were very genuine. And then the second piece was absolutely, again, one of the standout moments in my life. And we were in New Zealand, and we were invited to, I hope I don't start crackling again, but we were invited into the England camp. And because the Red Roses that were out in New Zealand, and there was a team out there. Had anybody, asked us to play, we'd have all had our boots on in a minute. But I think there are about 30 of us out there, and following all from the beginning to the end. And we were invited into the England camp, and they were all there sitting down, and we were in the front, and we sang a song, and then we gave them white roses. Oh, it was the most brilliant, because they have a song. They have a theme song. We tweaked the words. Jill Burns tweaks the words, and she played the guitar because she's just so clever like that. And we all learned it, and we practiced, and we sang this song back to them, and they loved it. The phones were going and the clapping and the swaying, and then we gave them their white roses, and it was just a standout moment again. And so they are really genuinely interested in us as people. And the last time, so prior to England France, we had the unveiling of our honors, international honors board at Twickenham. Again, just an incredible piece. And some of the women remembered my name. And I was like, oh, I'm very, very excited. They actually called me by my first name. And I thought, oh my word, I'm so invisible. And here these incredible women were actually saying, Sue, what do you think? So we had New Zealand was a stand-up moment when we were invited into camp.
And those bits are priceless, aren't they? You can't.
Priceless.
You can't buy that, because
a lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You've earned that from what you've done before, the story you've got to tell, and that's what being involved in the game has done for you.
Bruce, I'm so lucky. I'm just so lucky to have found the game. It was the making of me.
And here's something I get to speak at rugby clubs, and this is one of the things I sometimes touch on, that we all had our time in the game. And sometimes, not often, there's some rose-tinted specs, or you don't know how lucky you had it. But I don't know many people who would substitute their time for another time. You went through all that, you know, you were working at the same time as trying to play to the highest level, stay fit, organize a World Cup. The current team have got probably everything everyone's dreamed of. They've got time, they've got funding, they've got facility, they've got coaching, they've got the right kit eventually.
Yes.
They've got people watching.
Those heavy, big shirts.
I mean, you're not jealous, are you?
Not in the least. We talk about this, interesting, a lot. None of us would have given up that time we played. That era was incredible. And of course I'd love everything, the package that comes with the players now, but they deserve it. And they need to play at the highest standards. So they deserve that infrastructure. And we've worked hard for that infrastructure. But never would I give up that time. Never. You know, we were the pioneers. We sang in those bars. We played on those pitches. You know, it was an incredible period of time.
There's two bits around the legacy bit. As a male rugby player in a rugby club, we were inundated with the old guys telling us how it used to be and what we should have done and how we don't understand how we've all had that. And I've probably become that guy. I'm now doing that to other people. So the men had that. And I think there is a move to try and get to more like you're talking about those situations. But the other one is, I've spoken to internationals like Emma Wassell, who's been involved with Scotland for 10 years. And even she says she finds herself telling the young players like Emma, or you've no idea how lucky you are, because I used to have to train. I mean, the game has, you know, it was on an upward curve, and it just in the last probably 5 years, it's gone so steep, the difference in the women's
game. And quickly.
And it's, where does it go? Look into your crystal ball. What do you see in 5 years' time?
I see more women playing at grassroots. I see more young girls playing at grassroots. And I see England winning the World Cup in 2025.
And you'll be there with bells on, I would imagine.
Oh, you wouldn't keep me away, Bruce. Not in the UK. No, you wouldn't keep me away.
Some of the Scottish players that I've spoken to, obviously going to New Zealand is a dream. To do rugby in New Zealand for anyone is a dream. But to have a World Cup, it's not a home World Cup for Scotland, but it's as good as. It'll change the support. It'll change the exposure. It'll change who's able to be there physically. That's going to be really important for the home nations and the growth that you're talking about.
Absolutely. And I think if we go back to the 91 World Cup, one of the reasons why we took it on as well is that we had heard that there was going to be a World Cup hosted, a world tournament hosted in New Zealand. And we just sat around a table and said, there's no way these European sides can afford to go out there. There is no way. So in terms of expense and time, I'm really pleased that the tournament is in the UK this time. It'll just give greater access to not only Europe, but those home nation sides. They're playing at home.
Yeah, I'm very excited to go to those games.
So am I.
Is there a bit of looking over the fence at what the Lionesses have done, about what football has done? You know, the European Championships was, everybody was watching, and the spectator experience seemed joyful. There didn't seem to be an edge to it. It wasn't alcohol fueled. It just seemed like those crowds were having the best time watching women's sport. are the rugby fraternity looking over the fence at football saying we'll have some of that, please?
I think they are. And I think England-France was that start, because the Lionesses just made the country proud. And like you say, just huge crowds, great games. And it, you know, it really converted so many people to the women's games to watch it as a spectator sport. And I do think England and the RFU and the home nations are moving that way. We want to emulate that. We want to emulate seeing it to be it. We want to emulate that high standard of play. We want to emulate those incredible crowds with all that support. Yes, absolutely going the right way.
The players are so engaging and so accessible. You know, the male sport is, they've become almost untouchable. They have to live in a bubble. I'm not entirely sure I know why. I can imagine it must be tough to always be recognized, but you see the engagement over social media. You see after games, the female players are, you know, almost in the crowd taking, you know, speaking to everyone, taking every selfie, that's so important to, again, that legacy you're talking about.
Yeah. And I think, Bruce, I do have to say, I think there is a female male divide there. You know, women are great communicators. We're, you know, we want to be loved. We're in there, you know, we're in that crowd saying,
me too.
Here we are. We want to be, you know, this is us and you can do this. And you know, they're signing the autographs, they're signing the balls. So many young girls. And, you know, and they're role models, Bruce. They've become such fantastic role models in the game.
Yeah, and we've still got a generation who have had to do things like you. They've had to study alongside or have a job alongside, or they're having to do a bit of work on the side to fund. You see lots of them being at coaching courses because they need to top up what's going on. So they're still very accessible. And I think that, I don't know how long that'll last, but I think as long as it does, it's a great benefit. When you think of a World Cup at home, has anybody given you a call and said, Sue, how did you do it? Come and help?
No. Funny that, no. But they had...
Can we use your fax machine?
Yeah, can we use your fax machine? And oh, by the way, we won't be taking any of the big contracts into the sauna. So yeah, silly me. No, they've got, you know, it's professional, Bruce. World Rugby is all over this. They own it. They delivered it well. And it was just a joy. So I'm me, the three, four of us were has-beens. So we, you know, we set the ball in motion, and for us, it was about handing over.
It's going to be an incredible, not finish, but almost a finish to the loop.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine what the emotion is going to be like, and you probably can't and don't want to yet anyway. But
I don't want to peek too early.
No, exactly. As you sit at that final all these years later, I just can't imagine what that is going to be like.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, one must stay humble about it because we didn't know what we were doing back then. We didn't know the legacy we were leaving. So what we were doing was doing what we thought was the right thing to do at the right time. So the fact that it's in 2025 in the UK, and one of our committee members is now the president of the Rugby Football Union, you know, there's so many incredible tick boxes. And, you know, I can only say that, you know, I forever will be proud of what we did.
And you'll never need to buy a ticket again.
I do. I think you should call the RFU and tell them that. We all have to buy tickets.
The RFU need to fix that pretty soon. Yeah. Let's clip this bit and we'll send it to them. So, Sue, we got in touch because you are relentless in how you go about things and the love of this game. So the longest try, tell me what it is, where did it come from, and then we'll get on to what we're going to do about it.
Oh, Bruce, thank you so much for asking. The longest try. The longest try is kicking off at Twickenham on the 24th of July. We're covering approximately 1,700 miles. And we're going to score the try at Twickenham on the 12th of August. The event is a charity relay run. So every day for 19 days, I have six clubs running 15 miles each. Every club submits one person to run a mile. Every club runs 15 miles. I cover roughly 90 miles a day. We kick off at Twickenham. We head up past Leicester. We go up to Durham Way, into the Borders, hoping to get in. Yay! We're hoping to get to Edinburgh. We'll go back down to Dumfries. We're going to skirt past the Lake District because it's way too hilly there. We're going to head into Wales, out of Wales, West Country, touch into Cornwall, back in the South Coast, sort of Winchester Way, and score the try on the 12th of August. And that is going to be at the Wales, England-Wales World Cup warm-up match. Now, this entire event is in support of people living with motor neuron disease. And this is an event that I actually, interestingly, I rolled this out in 1989 first. And I was working for a charity called Healthy Aged. And I was involved in rugby and I thought, what can I do? What can I do? Okay, so this is what I'm going to do. And so I rolled out the Heineken longest try. And again, we ran the ball 1,721 miles, no maps, no Google, nothing. And we touched the ball down at Cardiff with the Pontypool front row running the ball in. So that was, and then, so how this has all come about is that I was, you know, sitting around a lockdown and of course the lovely Ed Slater was diagnosed. And then following that, Paul Rendell was diagnosed with motor neuron disease. Now I worked for the MND Association for 6 years. I've seen firsthand the devastation that this disease causes. I was in research dinners and meetings with Dottie Weir when Dottie was pounding on tables saying, you know, why does this have to happen? Why don't we have a cure? What are we doing about it? And so Dottie very kindly and brilliantly led and championed finding a cure. But I also know that living with motor neuron disease has a day in, day out challenge. And as the time progresses, all those challenges become more difficult and more expensive because there's all sorts of ventilators and adaptations to the house, wheelchairs. And so when Ed and Paul were diagnosed and I just put this all back together and I said, I'm going to launch the longest try and in support of people living with motor neuron disease. And what I'm really looking for, Bruce, is to unlock some of the Scottish clubs because we're coming to Scotland on the 28th of July. We're coming up out of Durham. We're going to hit the Borders, enter Hoyk. We have the lovely clubs, Melrose and Gala.
Yeah,
already signed up. And then we're going to try to get up to Edinburgh. We'll try to get up to Edinburgh on the 29th. But I think Scotland play Italy that day. So we might have to have a slight break while people are watching the game. And then we go Hoyt to Livingston on the 29th. And then on the 30th, we go Livingston to Dumfries. Now, Dumfries are already signed up as well. But what I really need, Bruce, is I really need 12 to 15 more clubs in Scotland to take that ball from the 28th out the other end, Dumfries, Penrith on the 31st. So, you know, I can't even imagine why you wouldn't want to take part. I think the great thing about this event is that it's a local event. And it's a local event that really reaches into the grassroots community rugby alongside Premiership clubs. So we have Premiership clubs involved as well. And it just is reaching deep into every sphere of rugby. And it's every 15 miles matters because I can't have a broken link. We run the ball every day for 90 miles. We go to bed. We start all over the next day. And we have some great fun doing so. And what I'm asking is, to be honest, it's not a lot, Bruce, compared to what we hope to achieve. It's 10 pounds a runner. It's 150 pounds a club. We can all, you know, that's 2 pints these days, 3 pints these days. So just dig in, don't drink so much. And then it's individual sponsorship. And if the club wants to sponsor as well, then so be it. We also have a silent auction and a live auction on our website. And I really, really, really need 12 to 15 Scottish clubs to join in the fun. We can't break this amazing relay run in support of motor neuron disease.
It's going to happen. So we're going to make sure that we get this message out. Now, you mentioned a couple of names there, obviously Ed Slater and Paul Rendell, who unfortunately just very recently has passed on. But those names mean a lot to the rugby community. And then there's this new MND community that Doddy and Stephen Darby and Rob Burrows and Ed Slater have almost brought to the forefront. They've always been there, but maybe a bit of a silent community. And now we're beginning to hear from them, and the pictures are on social media every day. And Doddy Weir is a, you know, someone I loved very much. And
icon.
We hold very dear up here. So that's going to happen. Paul Rendell, memories of Paul, the judge?
Well, to be honest, Bruce, what people have said, why are you doing this event now? Why now? Because I had to look at the timings of when I was going to deliver this event. And one of the main drivers was that I wanted to deliver it in Paul's lifetime. But sadly, that hasn't been the case. So, excuse me, we lost Paul on I think it was Tuesday night. And I just really wanted him to see this. And he knows how much he's loved. And I wanted to just make sure that he, you know, that we reinforce that throughout his lifetime. So it was really tough to get the news that he had passed away. And I just feel, you know, my condolences to his family and friends. It was a really hard message to hear. So it makes the longest try even more important, Bruce, because what we want to do is raise money for people living with motor neuron disease, and also have a great celebration of Paul's life. He was hilarious. He was such a character, and he is what rugby is all about. He was rugby through and through, and he was fun and a good player and a player of the highest standard. And he was so loved by his front row, by his pack, by his team, and across the country and worldwide. I mean, John Eales said to me, by email recently that, you know, I would love to come and, you know, join in. I can't, but Paul Rendell, what an amazing man. What a great player, what a great character. He is what he epitomized rugby and the fun we get out of it.
Yeah, and some of the stories, there was the bit about him being a really good rugby player, but then there was more about his character and how he behaved. And he's known by everybody as the judge. Everybody knows him as the judge. Yeah. And who knows what happened, because social media and camera phones weren't a thing. So let's just leave that one in the dim and distant past.
Thankfully, when I was at the England, Bruce, there was a lunch in support of Paul that Will Carling and the 91-92 team held at Twickenham in support of Paul. And I cornered Dean Richards, and I said, give me your best story. And I can't really tell the whole story because I don't have permission from him to do so, but B, it was on a flight and there was a lot of alcohol and the judge was in full glory, you know, presiding over. And I think they had to land the plane early or something like that. I don't know. I think Dean Richards is the person to tell that story. He owns that story. But he was an incredible character in what rugby is all about.
And Will Carlin's been involved in the promotion of this and getting involved in the longest try. You've got some big names back in this. It's obviously going to make a big deal. The money that's raised is going to make a big difference to not just people living with it, but with their families as well.
Correct. And Will has very kindly agreed to run that first mile from Twickenham on the 24th of July. So he's going to run that first mile and kick off the event. And what we have done as well is that we're involving all of Paul's clubs. So we are involving Slough are taking part, Bracknell are taking part, and Wasp FC are taking part. And of course, we come through the West Country and Gloucester is taking part. And we hope to cross over with Ed Slater on that day as well. So so it's not, you know, it is really all encompassing. And it is just bringing out the best of all of us in rugby.
Yeah, it's going to bring the community together. I absolutely love it. So coming into Scotland on the 28th of July, hopefully hitting Edinburgh on the 29th of July. Yeah. We've already got Gala, Melrose and Dumfries lined up.
Yes.
And there will be more. We will make sure of it. I'll make it a personal crusade to make it happen. So, Sue, I'm intrigued, though. Where are you? You're not in Richmond. Where are we talking to you?
Well, I'm in Richmond by sea. So I had a very big birthday and I always planned on being away for 3 weeks, well before I launched the longest try. So it's all, and if you could see what is in front of me, which you can't, I have three laptops going at once. And all I do is I just move and rotate seats as to what, you know, what I'm doing. I mostly sit in front of this laptop, which is the longest try laptop. And I'm in Marbella in Spain.
Of course you are. And what happens in Marbella stays in Marbella.
Well, the great thing is all, you know, some of my rugby girlfriends, you know, have been out. And then in about 2 hours, my Richmond pack are on their way. So, you know, the relationships and the friendships that we have in rugby, those packs, those front rows are some of my best friends. And still are 35 years, 40 years later. And they're all coming out in about 2 hours.
So all those people back home in Minnesota.
Yes.
What do they think about what's going on?
About what's going on in
well, but yeah, I'm a hooker now. Come on, there must have been some eyebrows raised when you tell them you're playing what game? You've organized what? You're in New Zealand doing what? Yeah. I mean, it's still not in the forefront of the consciousness in America, is it?
Well, actually, the game is, my surprise when I arrived is that the game was far more developed in the States than it was in the UK. I was playing club side. I was playing in leagues and tournaments in the US. So I was quite surprised when I came over in 83 that it wasn't as established. And so, but I, you know what rugby's like. It's brutal and your friends are brutal. And I was known as the fat back. So it was, yay! I was the fat back. And then when I get transferred here, I was the Yang Tang. So I think that has a lot to say about. But they're, again, they're, you know, I played for the Twin City Amazons. I made sure we had the lovely Martin Thomas wrote a book called Crossing the Line. Sorry, what am I saying? That's the movie that's being made.
Oh, wow.
World in Their Hands. Sorry, Martin. World in Their Hands is Martin Thomas's book. And that is all about the making of the 91 World Cup. And that has had a really good reception. So I just made sure that the Twin City Amazons were reading it and knew what had happened because I just disappeared. I played for two years and then disappeared. But we do have an incredible movie being made about the 91 World Cup as well, called Crossing the Line, When Life's a Pitch. And that is that will hopefully be released in 2025 post the World Cup. And that is that's just the story of the making of the 91 World Cup and a genre sort of like Eddie the Eagle made it in Dagenham, Bennett like Beckham. It's that sort of quintessentially British film. And so, yes, it's been on the cards for about 10 years. But with the rise of women's rugby and the profile, people started finally paying attention and we needed the money to bring that movie over the line. So, yeah. So, you know, if that comes good, then I'll be inviting those USA players over.
just there's so much happening, and you appear to have your finger in every single one of those pies. I don't know. I'm not surprised you've got three laptops on the go. So if people want to get involved in the longest try, they can get in touch. info@thelongesttry2023.co.uk, and you're on Twitter and Instagram. So go for it. Give us that one last rallying call.
Please, please, thank you.
So Sue, I didn't prime you for this, but at the end of these podcasts, I tend to ask people one question. So for me, happiness is egg-shaped. For you, Sue Dorrington, happiness is?
Oh, my word. Happiness is the incredible friends and life I've led.
Love it. Sue, thank you so much. It's been an absolute honor. You are an energy giver, and I've smiled the whole way through this. So thank you so, so much. And I look forward to meeting you very, very soon.
Oh, love to, Bruce. And thank you for taking the time to listen.
You are very welcome.
Get on the longest try, Bruce.
I'm on it. I'm all over it.
Otherwise, I'm running 90 miles a day. And they can't, they won't be able to call me the fat back or the egg tank by the time I finish. So I need help.
I'm all over it. I promise. Thank you. See you soon.
Thank you. You too.
Absolutely love it. What a legend, proper legend, Hall of Fame legend, the stories to tell. And you can just imagine this is going to be a success, because I'm pretty convinced that what Sue Dorrington put her names to is going to happen. If you've enjoyed it, you can catch us on Apple, Acast and Spotify. You can watch on Facebook and YouTube. And hopefully in July and August, we're going to see you out pounding the streets, getting that ball over the line for the longest try. Please, please get involved and support what is an unbelievable cause. My name is Bruce Aitchison from the Happiness Is podcast, and my happiness is egg-shaped. Until the next time, look after yourself, and I'll see you all again very, very soon. Thank you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.